Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Monday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law on the subject of the status change with our speaker, GW. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference call brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life when you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone on no uncertain terms that anyone looking for legal advice has no place or business here on any of these calls. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes, just folks saying what they might do, where they similarly situated to you, and nothing more. All right, next, if I can take everybody to the homepage of Your Remedies in the Law, www.yourremediesinthelaw.com. If we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and we'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, especially if this is all new to you. First on the left is the jurisdictionary course. That is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. That is your, better known to some as American Jurisprudence or AMJUR. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of this means to have at least a basic idea of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, although it's mostly known for its national win rate for traffic scenarios. That's not really why we have it here. The reason it's up here is it acts as a real-life homework assignment for the jurisdictionary course. And so the two of them go very well together here, especially if this is your first time. All right, next up, very quickly here, every call, of course, is broadcasted out every night on freedomsradio.com. Just underneath there where you see the jurisdictionary and the common law default is your register link. If you want to go ahead and pick up a membership today for Your Remedy, it's very affordable, $10 a month. You can do that to your credit card or PayPal, whatever it is you like. But if that's not an option, you have Freedoms Radio there, freedomsradio.com. Every call is broadcasted free of charge, so you don't ever have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, Grassfire Communications, formerly known as Statewide Communications. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every website that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. You've got a very easy to use install wizard. They'll have you put in some information, basic information. And then you've got a long list of topics that you can choose from that interest you. And when it's all said and done, it'll put you in contact there with people in your local area that share the same interest as you. The idea here is to put the power of communication and the power of education back in the hands of the common man. Say you get on there one day and you say, this happened to me today. First couple of people come back and say, well, I don't think that's fair. I don't think they should be able to do that. Well, clearly that's probably not going to help you very much in your educational part, even if it is a truthful statement. Maybe the next person comes in and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do if I were similarly situated. And, maybe somebody suggests that you go down to your local county courthouse and look, go to the law library, or maybe somebody suggests a YouTube video, maybe somebody suggests an educational video, maybe you'll find there at Your Remedy, any of the above. And so that's all we're trying to get folks to do with GrassFire. And so we encourage you to sign up for that as well. It's your earliest convenience. There's no charge to use that either. All right. Next up here, very briefly, I want to touch on this this next portion here. We call your caveat emptor or your buyer beware. When you come aboard with an information provider here at Your Remedies in the Law, you're doing just that. You're coming aboard directly with the information provider. These info providers pay for advertising at Your Remedy. This would be a cost or an expense to that information provider, along with any other cost associated with your particular educational process. And so more specifically, the bigger question is what is the exchange or refund policy at Your Remedy? There is none. If there was going to be a conversation of that sort, that would be a strict and private matter between you and your info provider. And even then, that's very few and far between. Must be extenuating circumstances. You're expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular information provider's time or process. All right, lastly here, I want to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conference calls are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something the speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn. But please, you must always keep it civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it. All right, that is a little bit of a short ramble for this evening. Normally it's considerably more in-depth. I do apologize, folks, a little under the weather here. I do show that Mr. Edward has joined us here. I'm not quite sure if he's on the call just yet, though.
I am here.
He is there. All right, well, I'll go ahead and pass that over to him, folks. Thank you.
All right, thank you so very much, Martin. I want to talk about the definition tonight of the United States. United States as defined. The definition in law of United States is found by the Supreme Court of the United States. Firstly, what is known as the Bidwell decision in 1901, and then later in 1945, a second case was brought, the result of which was to uphold the first case. In Hooven and Allison Company versus Evett, 34 U.S. 652, often referred to as the Hooven decision, the Supreme Court defined the two separate United States and stated it would be the last time it would address the official definitions of United States. The thought here is that the Supreme Court justices did not want to make it too obvious that there are two United States operating, since the result would be an exposure of this fraudulent income tax system. The ruling stated in part, the term United States may be used in any one of several senses. It may be merely the name of a sovereign occupying the position analogous to that of other sovereigns in the family of nations. It may designate the territory over which the sovereignty of the United States extends, or it may be the collective names of the states which are united by and under the Constitution. This opinion was written in Black's Law Dictionary, 4th, 5th, 6th edition, for certainty, basically verbatim of what I just read. It's the same thing. It just, they copied and pasted it in there. Here are some relevant court cases that speak to each of these definitions. The first one. These are the Americans in co-sovereignty with one another. They are not a part of the citizenry. The co-sovereignty of the American people was first recognized by the High Court in this case, Chisholm, X. Rel. Versus Georgia. The Supreme Court of the United States, number 2 U.S. 419, 1st L. Ed. 440, 1793 U.S., stated, quote, "To the Constitution of the United States, the term sovereign is totally unknown. There is but one place where it could have been used with propriety, but even in that place it would not, perhaps, have comported with the delicacy of those who ordained and established this Constitution. They might have announced themselves sovereign people of the United States, but serenely conscious of the fact, they avoided the ostentatious declaration." It continues, "As the state has claimed precedence of the people, so in the same inverted course of things, the government has often claimed precedence of the state. And to this perversion, in the second degree, many of the volumes of confusion concerning sovereignty owe their existence. Sovereignty was defined, and those who are sovereign were identified by this case, and it is still the standing law on sovereignty today. The Supreme Court, Dred Scott versus John F. A. Sanford, 60 U.S. 393. This is a few years before the 5 years or so before the Civil War, 1857, where the High Court stated in relevant part, quote, "The words people of the United States and citizens are synonymous terms and mean the same thing. They both describe the political body who, according to our Republican institutions, form the sovereignty and who hold the power and conduct the government through their representatives. They are what we familiarly call the sovereign people, and in every citizen is one of these people and a constituent member of this sovereignty. It is true, every person and every class and description of persons who were at the time of the adoption of the Constitution recognized as citizens in the several states became also citizens of this new political body, but none other. It was formed by them and for them and their posterity, but for no one else. And the personal rights and privileges guaranteed to citizens of this new sovereignty were intended to embrace those only who were then members of the several state communities, or who should afterwards, by birthright or otherwise, become members, according to the provisions of the Constitution and the principles upon which it was founded." Scott v. Sanford, 60 U.S. 393 at 406. Now, I want to identify here myself, my parents, grandparents, all the way back, my son, and forward. We are this definition. I can say I am Michael Edward, the name of a sovereign occupying the position analogous to other sovereigns in the family of nations. I can say that because we did the genealogy. I've certified it. I've put it in the record. And I've made that claim of birthright. And I've also notified the State Department of the United States. You'll find more astonishing revelations, such as you just heard, in the slaughterhouse cases and the legal tender cases. Number two and number three of these definitions are commingling in addressing their distinctive character and nature. So let's ask, what is the meaning behind some of these specific court cases? In Maxwell versus Dow, 20 SCR 448 at page 455, and I read, quote, "The privileges and immunities of citizens of the United States do not necessarily include all the rights protected by the first 8 amendments of the federal Constitution against the powers of the federal government," end quote. Well, this case clearly delineates between territorial citizens and state citizens. That is to say that the former has privileges and immunities granted to them by the Congress, while the latter has rights protected by the first 8 amendments to the federal Constitution against the powers of the federal government. It is an unalienable gift from the Almighty One. Next case, U.S. versus Valentine, 288 F. Sup. 957. Quote, the only absolute, only, that's singular, the only absolute and unqualified right of a United States citizen is to residence within the territorial boundaries of the United States. Now, if you're in one of the 50 Union states, are those 50 Union states territories of the United States? No, they're not. But, however, they did have a thing called the Buck Act in 1940, the zip code being something where federal zones were overlaid. Anyone using a zip code is recognized as being in a federal territory. This singular right comes from the Congress and not from the supreme lawgiver. We should note the legal term resident or residence. This is a unique term defined as, quote, one having domicile in Washington, D.C., but having residence within the territorial boundaries of the United States, end quote. Remember the discussions we've had in the past regarding the Buck Act and the difference between New York, a state within the freely associated compact states, and the state of New York being a territory of the United States. Next case, Wheeling Steel Corporation versus Fox, 298 U.S. 193, 8 L. Ed. 1143. Quote, therefore, the U.S. citizen, open bracket, citizens of the District of Columbia, close bracket, residing in one of the states of the Union are classified as property and franchises of the federal government as an individual entity, end quote. Whoa, this is a interesting confession. Territorial citizens, federal citizens, are property and franchises of the federal government. Well, golly, didn't you think that slavery was done with after the Civil War? Only involuntary slavery was done away with. We still have voluntary slavery. Read the 14th Amendment. Hendricks versus Maryland, SC Reporters, 610 through 625. Quote, a U.S. citizen, upon leaving the District of Columbia, becomes involved in interstate commerce as a resident, not having the common law right to travel of a citizen of one of the several states. Again, another confession, a U.S. citizen does not have the common law right of a citizen of one of the several states. This supports the U.S. versus Valentine, where it said the only absolute and qualified right of a United States citizen is residence within the territorial boundaries of the United States. City of Dallas versus Mitchell, 245 Southwest, 944. The rights of the individual are restricted only to the extent that they've been voluntarily surrendered by the citizenship to the agencies of the government. And what that means is that any time that you interface with an agency of the government, you have surrendered voluntarily your citizenship status to that agency, which is to the federal government. Well, there you go. Are you aware that you voluntarily surrendered to your citizenship away? Wadley versus Newell, Circuit Court, North District, California, March 13, 1905. Civil rights. Didn't say constitutional rights. It said civil rights under the 14th Amendment are for federal citizens and not state citizens. Federal citizens as parents have no right to the custody of their infant children except subject to the paramount right of the state. Martin Luther King was a fool for demanding his civil rights when he had every right to demand his constitutional rights as a state citizen. Well, this all should be enough to clear up things. We should notice the absence of the word constitutional rights in the 14th Amendment. We thought we had elevated ourselves from former freed slaves under the 13th Amendment to have equal rights to the Americans of European descent. But what we find out is that it was a scam all along for these Africans who were now Americans of African descent, and at the same time, Americans of European descent were suckered right into it as well. In Perry versus United States, 294 U.S. 330, 353, this is a 1935 decision. The Congress, as the instrumentality of sovereignty, is endowed with certain powers to exert on behalf of the people in the manner and with the effect the Constitution ordains. The Congress cannot invoke the sovereign power of the people to override their will as thus declared. Or more simply stated, the Congress cannot invoke their sovereign power over the sovereign power of the people. That's what it should have said, but they like to get wordy. So I see this as clearly saying, quoting Jefferson, that the Congress was bound by the chains of the Constitution. In Houston versus Moore, 18 U.S. 133, this is a long time ago, 1820. Quote, every citizen of a state owes a double allegiance. He enjoys the protection and participates in the government of both the state and the United States. How does the United States give to one but yet take from another? Is this playing both ends against the middle? No. What this is saying is that you have protections under your state constitution as well as protections under your federal constitution. Then in Moore versus Illinois, 55 U.S. 13, 20, it says every citizen of the United States is also a citizen of a state or a territory. He may be said to owe allegiance to two sovereigns and may be liable to punishment for an infraction of the laws of either. So the first one, Houston v. Moore, says we enjoy the protections of both the state and the federal government. And Moore v. Illinois says that we are liable to the punishment of both the state and the United States. So you have to beg the question, how do you know when the state can step in and exercise their authority that you've delegated to them, and when the federal government can enter into your home, if you would, and exercise their authority delegated to them from the states that we delegated some of our authority to? How is that done? Well, it's done very simply when you go back and reflect upon the definition of United States. The second definition talks about sovereign territory of the United States. That's 10 miles within the seat of power, all territories, possessions, and enclaves. They are no different than any monarchy or plutocrat or dictator in the world ever since. It's the same setup. Looks different, but it's the same thing. Versus the third definition, where you have the several union states under and by the Constitution with rights and immunities by the creator of the universe. So, if you commit a crime and you're charged federally, then you have to be on federal land, and you have to be a federal person. So if you're in any of the states of the Union, you're not in Washington, D.C., you're not in Puerto Rico, Guam, American Samoans, and on, there's like 13 of them, you're in one of the several states, can the feds actually charge you? No. And that's why correcting your status enables that to be so powerful as to make them go away. Now, they're going to fight you, no doubt about that. You're going to need a team in there to assist you to navigate this. But nonetheless, you will succeed. Lastly, state or territory. It sounds like there is an assertion requiring authenticated evidence to be introduced first in order to establish a proper defense. In the United States versus Cruikshank, 92 U.S., 542, 551, it says, quote, it is the natural consequence of a citizenship which owes allegiance to two sovereignties and claims protection from both. He owes allegiance to the two departments, so to speak, and within their respective spheres must pay the penalties within their respective spheres, which each exacts for disobedience to its laws. In return, it can demand protection from each within its own jurisdiction. Right there, it can't get any clearer. So if a state citizen, an American national, properly recognized under Title 8, Section 1502 of the United States Code, as one, you have unalienable rights. And taxation, constitutionally speaking, is to be apportioned. And if it's apportioned, then how may a right devolve to just a privilege? Your reply, your answer is deprivation of rights under color of law, whether it's civil, at Title 42, Section 1983, 1985, and 1986, or it's criminal at 18 U.S.C. 242. In Murdoch versus Pennsylvania, 319 U.S. 105, it says, no state shall convert a liberty into a privilege, license it, and attach a fee to it. In Settlers versus Birmingham, 373 U.S. 262, if the state converts a liberty into a privilege, the citizen can engage in the right with impunity. In U.S. 116, U.S. 616, quote, the court is to protect against any encroachment of constitutionally secured liberties, page 2. In Howitt versus Rose at 496, this is also brought in as recently as 1990. So that's the foundation for tonight's call. I apologize if I've taken too long with it, I just wanted to give you a thorough understanding of that. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn the call over to GW. Go ahead, buddy.
Hey, all right. Very good. Yeah, I just wanted to come on here. And of course, you covered, I'm sure, a whole lot of information there, Michael. And I know that you got that letter that we were one of my clients was sent here recently.
John
has it now? Okay, cool.
Yeah, John has been in and out of the hospital literally every other 3 days for this past 2-3 weeks.
Oh, man.
And then the other day, day before yesterday, he was T-boned in an automobile accident that totaled his truck.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So whatever repair work that they had been doing on the lower part of his back, he's back in there again yesterday. And he goes back into the hospital Wednesday for another operation.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
Okay. Praying. Wow. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Yep.
Okay, well, our prayers, I hope everybody is praying for Brother John. I'm going to be praying even more, with this incident. Okay, we need him whole. God, please. Send your ministering angels to him now. Heal his body. Okay, well, it's hard to move on past here, but one of the things I'll just share that I was privy to this week is last Saturday I met with a gentleman and had about a 4.5 conversation with him and his assistant that came into my area, and we sat down and at a really cool pizza place that his friends owns. And had a great conversation about some things and his process about actually doing some very interesting stuff with the understanding of being a secured party creditor. And of course we talked about, you know, correcting status and everything else in multiple different ways, but it was so interesting in talking to this gentleman who's got many, many, many years of background and doing court cases and helping people and discharging debt, and especially IRS debt. And boy, but he confirmed to me about what I already pretty much knew about the players out there that are pretty nefarious, that are getting a lot of information out and being big influencers, namely Anna Von Reitz and also David Strait and Bonnie Strait, and had recently had direct altercation with Bonnie Strait, and is coming out to meet him and trying to get him to give her his, basically his process. He ended up not doing it because he figured out that it was not a good thing to interface with her or her husband. And he believes that they're definitely plants. And so that was a very, very interesting conversation to have with somebody who has face-to-face and some discernment with people in this movement. And so I want to tell you, you know, everybody on the call that, you know, it's it is a imperative to really understand the underlying elements of why you're doing what you're doing and how to do it in a proper way that is going to bring about the right result that you want and the remedy that you're trying to achieve. And we've been very pleased to tell you that, you know, we've been able to do that with a lot of our clients, and we've been able to prevail and get them situated without throwing them into harm's way, which, you know, on the other side, with a lot of these other gurus, they're getting a lot of people into harm's way. And so I just wanted to say that. Also had a little bit of a interaction with another potential client that's coming on that I have that's doing a and I know I'm you know, going into Bernie zone a little bit here, but I just wanted to tell you that when you go out there and try to find results and remedies for yourself with doing the 508C1A, with Bernie, we really have the a treasure there. And I was just talking with a gentleman that has been, you know, potentially ripped off of quite a lot of money. Went through I think it's called, and don't quote me on this, but Foundation Source or something like that, to put together a nonprofit that he thought was going to be a 508, turned out to be a 501c3. And the people running it have been just charging excruciating amounts of money in fees and things. Ended up when he was questioning them really hard through his attorney, they ended up telling him that he's stuck. And so finally he's kind of got it resolved. But, boy, I'll tell you what, there's just a lot of organizations out there that are just control freaks. They were trying to control every action, every submission, every donation, every transaction that was being made with this so-called nonprofit, and ended up, you know, kind of being they're really an adverse party to the situation, and really wanted to control every aspect of his whole ministry existence. And what the whole thing that's so nice with Bernie, I'll just tell you, is that you have none of those things with the the process and the type of structure that Bernie provides. So I just wanted to get that out there and give Bernie some accolades on this call. And Michael also, of course, Michael is very connected to Bernie and handles, you know, a lot of the input from people coming in to do their structures that are on this call. So with that said, you know, this call is about really correcting your status at the, you know, the State Department level in Washington, D.C., and getting the paperwork done correctly to be able to get through the process and also to, you know, get your passport card, and then have the ability to be able to know how to use it correctly and what that will achieve for you. And so it's a great remedy to have. It's really a foundational element that you can build upon. And so just want to make that clear. Also, anybody that is dealing with extreme issues, and they pop up every once in a while, you know, Michael and John are well prepared to deal with the extreme issues that happen in this arena too. Also, that would in most cases impair you or stop you cold from being able to go through with this process with any other provider out there besides Michael and John and myself. And so, you know, not that I'm trying to, you know, give us pats on the back. It really, I give all the accolades to Brother John, who is very accomplished and very well connected and very well disposed to be able to lead somebody through some extreme situations so that they can also prevail in procuring their passport card. So with that said, why don't we open up the channels of communication here to anybody that wants to ask questions and is on the line and is raising their hand, and I imagine Martin will take us to that place.
All right, thank you. Yes, star 2 on your keypad, folks, if you have a question. Star 2 to raise your hand at this time. If you're listening on the Freedoms Radio side, type your questions in the question bar and click submit.
I think this would be a perfect time to interject to share with people that what GW just was speaking about, particularly with regards to John, who has the litigation arm of the team. He will be speaking tomorrow night and will be giving you updates on a student of his who has corrected his status, who the processes that were accomplished back in 2017 had the city charges dropped against this student. And the federal charges were not dropped in writing. However, they disappeared from PACER. And they did not reappear on PACER until just a couple weeks ago, a month ago. They disappeared. No record on PACER of what was on PACER at that time in 2017. Disappeared. And then reappeared about a month ago. He was arrested and is presently sitting in a federal containment cell waiting trial. His parents hired John, the team, to come in, and you're going to learn how the application of having corrected his status changes everything with regards to the nature of these charges. He was charged on Louisiana soil how does the federal government step into Louisiana? Unless the presumption is that you're on federal territory and you're a federal citizen. Which, of course, Louisiana is not a federal territory, and Mr. T, that's what we're calling him for the purposes of the call, is not a federal citizen. As recognized by the State Department of the United States, as recognized by the Board of Elections in his parish. Louisiana has parishes, we have counties, but same thing. And he has a letter from them saying you can't vote. By the way, GW, we're now including in the process that everyone who has corrected their status file with the county election supervisor this affidavit that they already have received from us and have been processed through the State Department of the United States and through their appointment again at a State Department of Representatives to include that. Because that letter saying, well, no longer being a United States citizen, you no longer can vote in elections, which is going to develop another lawsuit, but we have to have time for that at some time in the future. Mm-hmm. So this is what we're going to be talking about tomorrow night. Everyone on this call tonight should be on this call tomorrow night. So incredibly important that you watch how this unfolds, because this is going to unfold in very slow time. They're going to fight it. And you're going to learn, you'll have the opportunity to learn just how strong and powerful being an American national, being a Union State citizen is, every step of the way. Back to you, Martin.
Great.
All right, thank you. Yes, I believe first up we have Ron. I can get him unmuted. Go ahead, yeah. Ron.
Yeah, GW, guys of the team, what is my first step I need to take to change my status?
Okay. So, your first step would be getting in touch with Michael Edwards. Okay. Engaging him and getting the instructions for how to do the remittance or how to fund that. That's a very first step on this phone call.
Now I have a AAA account. They can start working on a passport. But we're talking about going into the State Department and doing, like, some heart surgery here, right?
Well, in a way, you said something about AAA. What are you talking about?
One of the benefits of AAA is they'll help you with your passport.
Okay. Well, I would.
I would
caution you pretty strongly on that one, because I don't think AAA is going to, is in any way, shape, or form is going to show you how to get off the plantation. I think
I understand that. And it might be helpful, might not be. But taking the steps, does it require going in person, multiple counties away,
yeah,
in person, in the State Department, stuff like that?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yep, it does. And, it's something that, and it's not hard at all. Everybody that makes it through says, wow, okay, that was pretty cool. You know, now that I got that done. But yeah, you've got to be there in person, because when you do the application, which is a brand new DS-11 that is properly filled out, okay, it has to be filled out in a certain way, and I can't explain it on this call, and it's something
that's
you know, Yeah. But it's coupled together with a affidavit, and there's certain markings on the actual application. And then when you do the actual application with the administrator that is an official State Department employee, they have to witness your signature on that application live. There's no way to do it online or anything else. They have to witness it live, and that makes it applicable for them. And so, that is, and we have really gotten the system down to where we can do it pretty expediently. Pretty doggone expediently.
Nice.
So,
nice. I've done enough live signatures going through the charitable religious trust.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Get that in place, and I'm good.
If I may, I'd like to elaborate on what Ron was talking about with regards to AAA, and that is that if you are coming in from another country around the globe, and you go to a AAA office with your driver's license, the equivalent of that from your country, showing them your passport, et cetera, they will issue you an international driver's permit, and that's what they operate with as they travel around the country.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Ron gave me an idea.
Yes.
Someone that is really comfortable with the knowledge that we impart on every Monday night call to go in there with their U.S. passport and their State Department pass card and say, I would like to have an international driver's permit issued to me.
Yeah, I knew you were heading that direction. I was just leaving room for something else.
Just causing trouble.
Now, we had talked the other night on the Saturday night's call about lineage. How does that come? Because you say it so very quickly, I don't get the chance to hit the record button, but you quote your status as a sovereign.
If you email me requesting a copy of tonight's recording, I'll send it to you.
Okay. There was trouble with the site tonight. I went in to go register, and it turned to a gray screen and just so.
Yeah, let me update everyone. I contracted 2 months ago with a company in Iceland that basically has utilized caves, part of their geothermal and part of their frozen tundra to operate servers for individuals around the world. You can either purchase a server from them. It is your server. And they will deal with it with you. Or you can use their servers for less money. And but basically they've created their own cloud. And I don't trust clouds. I like point of sale, physical, tangible, my own server. So we now, as of this morning, have that server in our hands. And we are in the process of doing the foundational work of setting the server up, its operating system, and so forth and so on. And then we will begin migrating everything that we have presently here in the States to Iceland. Once everything is established there, then, which we think will take less than a month, because we have like 35 websites and there's a whole lot of connecting that has to be done at that level, the root level in Iceland, by doing it here, that then we will turn our attention on the archives. We'll also turn our attention on Grassfire Communications. Everyone knows what the archives are, so you're going to have the ability to go to the calendar like you can presently at Freedoms Radio, look and see who is speaking that night and who spoke then in the past, click on the archive. You can either stream it or you can download it. That function has been destroyed for over a year now. You'll be able to do that easily once we're set up in Iceland with that. But the other part that is to share with you is Grassfire Communications. This, in my opinion, is the key, without violence, without bloodshed, without exercising the Second Amendment alternative, without watering the Tree of Liberty. This is the key, because it enables you to email, to text, to Twitter, to Facebook. I'm using those last two by the services that they perform, not having any association with them. They'll all be under this Grassfire Communications, where you communicate with one another generally, anonymously, by and to venue. So if, Ron, you're in Hemet, I show you on my board from Hemet, California.
Yeah,
you can sit there with Grassfire Communications and say, I want to talk to everyone in Hemet, California about the Second Amendment. And those people who are members of AmericansRestoringAmerica.com utilizing Grassfire Communications, who are in Hemet, California, who said they want to have conversation regarding the Second Amendment, they'll read your email. So if you go from a couple of 5 or 10 people to 50 to 100 people to 500 to 1,000 people, as this grows, now you go to the Hemet City Council meetings and say, we're not talking about what's going on in this county, but right here in Hemet, we want open carry. We want constitutional carry. We want you to be recognized not as a municipality of the United States, but as a city or a township within California, one of the union states. And you'll have the numbers to make it happen overnight, literally, overnight. Okay?
I hear you. And just for clarification, this is an old phone, and so my voice over IP number from San Diego here goes through the email and everything. I use a regular phone. So I'm in San Diego, which would probably make a bigger impact if we were looking for open carry and
rights
and responsibilities. And
every one of those sitting council members in that city, in that county, have many, many, many people that personally know them, that know that would love to tell the tale about their corruption if they could do so anonymously, but point you to where to find the evidence.
Yeah.
You know, you talk to somebody on the city council that is going way out in left field, literally. You know who their mother is, and you have a personal relation with the mother. You call her up, say, "Did you want your little Johnny to be doing this kind of position as a county council member?" She comes back, "No, but what can I do?" "Well, Mom, I'll show you what you can do." It's game over. Once Grassfire Communications launched and is populated, it's game over. For us, we win.
Awesome.
I like winning.
Yeah, I do too. All right, Martin. Ron, anything else?
Just my best wishes for John. Hope he gets back. I haven't heard him in a long time.
Well, he'll be on the call tomorrow night. He's already agreed to do that.
Yes.
The next morning, he's in surgery 6 hours later.
Yeah, that's crazy.
He's a soldier.
Okay, so I'll shoot you an email. Thank you.
You're welcome, Martin.
All right, thank you. And next up, we have also Ron.
Yes.
Hi, Ron. This is Cocoa, Florida now.
Two things. One, I will be a willing victim to approach AAA once my status is corrected, once I get my pass card. Okay. I am very interested in that aspect. Secondly, BJ, is there any progress or information on the private banking side that you can disclose?
Oh, are you talking to me, GW?
Yes. GW, I'm sorry.
It's all right. So, nothing that I can disclose yet. It has been a long and grueling process trying to get things done. We had a situation last week where we had one of the banks sold, and they were getting trying to get transfers and everything done, and the gentleman that was buying the bank, and this is about a week ago now, maybe a little over a week ago now. Anyway, the gentleman buying the bank ends up dying in his bathroom at 2:00 in the morning, and that threw a little bit of a wrench in the works. And so, just stuff you deal with, you know. Anyway,
that's it for now.
That
does not help progress.
No, it doesn't. That's nothing more I can really share with you at this point. I will when things really start bubbling and boiling. So that's all I can say for now.
Thank you very much. I just stir in the pot, see where we sit.
Sure.
I yield.
All right. Thank you, Ron. And next we have Brent in Arizona.
Yeah, hi. Good evening. I got in on the call late just a few minutes ago, and I heard some conversation about the vehicle situation, and that's the next up priority on my list, is to figure out what to do with the vehicle registrations and all that stuff. And I was on the call a week or two ago and brought it up. I know there was a recording that was very much focused on that. I think it was maybe 5 weeks ago, maybe longer. I went on, you know, you already talked about this, Michael. I went on Freedom's Radio and tried to access the archives, and I tried to update my account. And for some reason, the payment isn't working or whatever, and I'm locked out of the account, and I couldn't get access to my account. But anyways, is there any way that, do you guys know which date that recording was where you talked specifically about registering vehicles and all that stuff with the DMV?
Not really, no. Sorry.
Me either.
Ransomware cluster bombed us.
Yeah.
Recovering.
So moving the vehicles into a CRT, which is under the corporation's sole, that's a process. Typically, it's a title transfer process, and you do that through the DMV. Is there any other I've heard about this abandoned title thing and getting the manufacturer's certificate of origin and, you know, all these other aspects to it. What is the cleanest way to take care of that situation?
The cleanest way, is buying the vehicle into the trust. Okay, letting the trust buy the vehicle. Okay, so, you know, and then you have a situation where people want to transfer. Okay, I understand that. And so, you know, it could be a situation where you are creating a bill of sale and selling it through the trust, you know, and just going through the process of transferring the title when it you know, so-called sells, okay? But, I mean, either way, it's kind of like a sale, all right? And if you want a good excuse to buy a different vehicle, this is a good excuse to do it. it's, you know, because it needs to be titled into the trust name.
Right.
The vehicle. Yeah.
But yeah. Then you still have to, I mean, the state still basically holds title to that, and you still have to follow their rules as far
sure.
as all the other
oh,
stuff.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, you're still following their rules to, you know, put tags on it and license plate tags and things like that. But for me, it's one of those things where personally, okay, I don't have a big problem with that. It's a very small little inconvenience for me, so that I don't get interviewed a lot. You know, I tell the story of my friend Gary Hunt, who had David Koresh's power of attorney during the Waco standoff, and he was a good friend of mine, and we did a lot of stuff together as far as whistleblowing, and I did a lot of different videos for Gary back in the day and back in the early 90s. And he used to show up with the videos for me to edit when I was doing that for the standoff during that 53-day standoff in Waco. And he would bring the videos, and I would edit them and give them back to him. And he would have, on his vehicle, brand new pickup. He liked the Dodge Ram, and he never had any license plates or tags, and he didn't even have a driver's license. And so, but let me tell you, you know, he got interviewed all the time. That's what he called them, interviews, you know, by cops and everybody else. I mean, you know, I mean, mostly state troopers, sheriffs, you know, police officers. And so, he always prevailed. He was very well situated to understand and stand on his ground on all of his rights, and he could quote statutes and court cases and everything else, and they barely argued with him. But I saw him about 10 years later, and he had another brand new pickup, and this time it had plates and tags and everything, and I kind of hit his shoulder and said, "Gary, this is the first time I've ever seen your vehicle with plates and tags." And he goes, yeah. He goes, "You know, I've been there, done that, got married, I now have my daughters, my twin daughters, and, you know, I just got tired of having the interviews." He says, "Now they leave me alone totally, you know." And so it's up to you, Brent. It's what you want to what do you want to accomplish, and what are you willing to put up with for accomplishing, you know, what is absolutely your right? You can either kind of do it in what I call the kind of more of a peaceful way, which is you're paying extra dollars, and okay, so they're holding the title. They actually hold the legal title to it, and you only have the equitable side. But the thing is, it's a little more peaceful because you don't get the knee-jerk reactions from the cop or state trooper you're passing with when you have no plates on your car, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's just, you know, I mean, what do you want to do? What do you want to accomplish?
I want to be free in as far as I don't want to be hassled, and I want to do things in such a way that if I ever am hassled, that it's legally clean.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think you've already prevailed once.
Well, but, you know, that's, as far as the ownership is concerned.
Yeah.
So if it's owned by the trust, I guess that just takes care of the problem. It's out of my name. It doesn't reflect on my Union State citizen, American national status.
Nope, it doesn't. You're right. Yep, you can still prevail that way. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Star 2 on your keypad, folks, if you have a question, or type it in on the Freedom's Radio side. Doesn't seem to refresh here on the radio here.
Again, prepping them.
All right. Thank you, Martin. Thank you, GW. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to remind you again, because many of you came on just in the last 20 or 30 minutes, 40 minutes, as I shared earlier in the call, tomorrow, John will be, same phone number, same PIN, same time, just different speaker, different issues. John, the point of the spear for litigation, will be speaking and covering the story of Mr. T, young man who corrected his status, who on a separate occasion, prior to correcting his status, actually, in 2017 was arrested in New Orleans and was also charged twice, once by the city and once federally, with the paperwork that had been produced at that time. The city dropped their charges, and at the same time, the feds, dropping their charges, but the feds, the case disappeared off of PACER. Poof, gone. This is not the first time we've seen PACER manipulated, if you would. And so we just thought that, okay, great. We declare victory. It's over with. And everybody went their happy way. Well, last month or so, the feds knocked on Mr. T's door, handcuffed him, and he's been since then in federal detention awaiting trial. The family hired the team, and we are every Tuesday giving you a blow-by-blow description and an update so that you can watch and listen on how a proper defense is mounted and played out. So this also shares with you that unlike all the other operators on the Internet offering this status correction, we're the only ones that have a team in place to do something about it. We're the only ones that give you continuous education about how we would properly handle ourselves in all matters relating to it so that you don't end up like that young man from whether it was Wyoming or Utah, I forget, that was ventilated over 40 times by six or eight police officers because he arrogantly had a gun in view and just totally mishandled everything. One of the officers screams, "Gun!" Everyone draws their weapons and empties their magazine into him. So, Mr. Michael from Las Wages, welcome to the call. You have a question?
A couple of them.
ordinary income, and then 1099A form, it says abandoned property. The abandoned property they're talking about is the Bankruptcy Act of 1933. All bills are prepaid. But
yeah,
trying to get them to do that's another story. And then the Waco thing there with Timothy McVeigh, he'd just come back from Iraq. And here's another interesting thing. He was, because they had a fence line set up where you couldn't see the compound, but you could hear the noise. And every night they were flying over with Hueys and just emptying 50 cows into the compound. Them guys knew they were murdering those. In Waco, yes. They were murdering those people. They had an agenda.
Timothy McVeigh was in Waco?
Yeah. Yes, he was. He was
Oklahoma,
at the compound.
Oklahoma City bomber.
He was the alleged Oklahoma City bomber with the help of the CIA. But he wasn't in the compound. He was on the outskirts with the news people and other people. And someone was saying, well, what's all that noise? What's that thump, thump, thump? And he said, that's 50 cows going on. And they were just.
For what building?
Yeah, continuously, all night long. Yeah, Timothy McVeigh was set up for the Oklahoma bombing, just like Sirhan B. Sirhan was set up.
Right.
Yeah, they've got their game down pretty good. There's
a lot
of things that. Yes, but ordinary income. What's their definition of ordinary income?
Ask John tomorrow night.
All right. I'll try not to miss it tomorrow night. So I've been.
Tomorrow night's an incredible call. It's going to be an incredible call.
Yeah. I'll make it a point to be on it or try to.
Copy that.
Almost missed tonight because I was doing something else and I realized my, time slipped right on by.
There you go.
But anyway, okay, I'll be on tomorrow night.
Really good. GW, any closing comments?
No, that's it. That's it. Everybody have a super cool evening.
Yes, sir, we will.
Okay.
All right. So, anyways, everyone, tomorrow night, be here, be square. You're going to listen to John bring you up to date on he's calling it As the Stomach Churns, the saga of Mr. T. And then, of course, Wednesday is Mr. Slevin's LLC, and that's a great call, too. So we'll talk to you then. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.